Hey guys, welcome back to Reality TV. Well, I have to say, after last week, you guys have a way of making a gal feel real special. And after the outpouring of pleas to keep Reality TV alive over here, I have decided I just don't know how to quit you. So instead of closing my mic for good over here over the next month, I will just be kind of slowing down to one or two episodes a month through the rest of the year. And I really hope you join me over on We Love to Hate Everything. Right now, it is in the process of being approved on iTunes. So once it's up and running, please make sure you keep up with me over there. And I just have to say, please remember that Amanda is one of my best friends. She's hilarious and fun. She's open to anything. Actually, at the moment right now, she's texting me all of her opinions on George and Anfisa and Mohammed and Danielle. But, you know, our opposite personalities in a lot of respects, we're similar in a lot of ways, but our personalities can be very different. And that's what makes our podcast so much fun. Those of you who are on Patreon who subscribe, share how you feel and what you know about us, because you definitely know us on a deeper level than what I share on Reality TV and what Amanda shares on Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom. So basically what I'm trying to say is give it a try. It's a podcast. It's not choosing a college or a major. We're having fun. We're laughing. And we hope you do too. Now, because it's my little guy's birthday today, and he has lots of things planned for me to do this afternoon, I'm just going to jump right into the 90 Day Fiancé tell-all part uno. Now, what's interesting is that next week, we have a one-hour tell-all and then a two-hour sister wives. But it gets very interesting even after that, because the following week, which is the 25th, yes, I think that's what I'm looking at. Sunday the 25th shows 1 hour of Happily Ever After and then 2 hours of that weird sister show. So does that mean next week is the finale, you know, part two of the reunion and then a 2 hour season finale of Sister Wives? Are we getting no finale episode and no tell-all for Sister Wives? If anyone knows what's going on, let me know, because I'm going to be severely depressed if Sister Wives is leaving us at the same time as 90 Day Fiancé, because I don't know how Happily Ever After is going to go. And I guess that just leads into this tell-all part one, because a lot of the couples from this season and a couples from seasons past, like Ron and Tiffany, and who else is coming back? Oh, Michael and Angela. I'm really not that into them, but I guess that's why it's Happily Ever After. They'll give us something to look at, something to watch. Anyhow, let me know what you think. Let's get into this 90 Day Tell-All Part 1, though. We get quite a bit of Yara and Jovi in this, and holy hell, they're very likable. Right off the bat, when Julia and Yara see each other at this tell-all, it's hard to figure out what's going on, because it looks like Julia likes Yara, but Yara doesn't like Julia that much. And they have this banter where you can't tell whether they're both being sarcastic with each other or whether Yara is really like, I'm kind of seeing through this sweet girl veneer that we end up seeing and getting confirmed later on with Julia. But let's talk about what Yara is wearing here, or what she is not wearing. And that is anything that's loose fitting. I mean, she is wearing the tightest outfit and she looks amazing. But I can't deny where my eyes went. And that was to her crotchal region, and it looked like she was wearing, what do they call that, like a cod piece or something? There was a weird heft or weird sort of shape to her privacy area, and I'm asking this as someone who isn't into that sort of spandex pants fashion when I go out anywhere, and I don't watch the Kardashians because I feel like that's all they wear too. Is this a thing that you wear something to cover so you don't get camel toe. I'm spending way too much time talking about this, but you guys let me know because I can't be the only person whose eyes went there. And it wasn't because I'm like super into women's crotches and camel toe. It's because the way the pants ride so high and it's just pulled up and it's kind of like that mom jeans silhouette that's super popular now, which I'll never understand. Your eyes just go there, which is why mom jeans are such a horrible cut. But again, I don't know why it's very popular now. Speaking of mom jeans, Rebecca arrives and she looks great. Clearly, she's had some Botox and filler that she brings up later. It looks fine on her. I think it's a little overdone around her mouth because she's very expressive. Like, I'm very expressive. And let's just say, well, you know what? I'm going to go with Yara here. I'm going to be unashamed. Yes, 2, maybe 3 times a year, I get a little Botox. I'm very conservative with it because I have a very expressive face. So if I were to go full Frozen, people would think I look absolutely insane. And I think that's where Rebecca's mouth region is a little frozen. Or maybe her lips weren't totally symmetrical. They were a little wonky or a little uneven. But all in all, she's beautiful. Rebecca is a very pretty woman and she looks great no matter what. Even Yara compliments her. And I feel like if Yara compliments you, she doesn't bullshit. So if she's complimenting you, you gotta believe her. And I would feel great about myself if Yara complimented me. Now, then Mike strolls in. And when I say stroll, he literally strolls. And I don't know why I didn't clock his manner of walking before, but he really does have a cocky walk. He's got his hands in his pockets all the time. He kind of leans back a little and he has very long legs. So they just kind of move in slow motion. And maybe it's just a function of how tall he is, because I'm thinking about when giraffes run, they can't help it. Even when giraffes are running, they're fast, but they look like they're in slow motion because their legs are so long. So they move slowly. Didn't know you were getting a lesson in zoology today, did ya? Now then, oh God, Da Bella Da Ball arrives, freaking Andrew in full magician realness. But like I said last week, it's D-list magician on the school assembly circuit. His pants are navy, but his vest is black, and he's got this purple shirt and a blue striped tie. I want to say he might have had a pocket watch or something. Gross hair, as usual. I mean, he's washed it, but he's definitely gotten some highlights, and it's parted on the side. I don't think men with long hair are supposed to part it on the side. And I know that's a whole thing, okay? Skinny jeans and parting your hair on the side. But his was specifically and purposely parted on the side. That was not a casual flip. Someone told him, part it on the side and you're going to get more volume on one. Why am I even talking about him? He sucks. All right, let's get to Natalie, who arrives. She bounces in with the Glenn Close runaway bride eyes where you can see the whites around her pupils and these overly glossed lips. She blows off Mike and she's got this scarf on, and then she storms out and she starts screaming something about Rebecca, that lady in yellow. And that never totally materialized, or maybe we'll see that in part two. Then we see Tariq and Hazel, who are calling in from home, and they're in separate rooms. So it's like, oh no, have they broken up? Dun, dun, dun. But then it gets cleared up fairly quickly because Shawn walks on set and she's got this bedazzled face shield. Very Real Housewives of Dallas, which I'm not watching because the season sucks. But all in all, Shawn looks beautiful as always. So let's get to the opening of the show, where immediately we're told Stephanie and Ryan and Harris and his wife will not be joining, and no reason given. I think it's because there was that whole thing with Stephanie and Ryan, and Stephanie saying that she was sexually assaulted during the filming. I'm not going to get into it because I truly don't know the whole backstory, but we do know the backstory between Amira and Andrew. Obviously, we hear about that or we touch on it later in the show, but we're told Amira is going to be joining in from France later. zoom over to Andrew, and if looks could kill, Andrew would be behind bars where we would all love to see him right now. You know, let the angels sing, hallelujah, because the guy is a controlling piece of shit. Again, more on that later. Yara and Jovi. We have a couple minutes with them. They're saying the baby's great. The baby did to Jovi what we've all wanted to do since the day we met him. And then we scoot over to Julia, who immediately started driving me nuts. And I was starting to have a lot of regrets because I thought she was great this season. I was like, she can do so much better than Brandon. Why is she there? But now, watching this tell-all, she really has started to think she's cute. She is thinking way too highly of herself. She started to buy the hype that I was giving her, that I think most of the viewers were giving her. Then we go over to Natalie, and Sean refers to a past tell-all between Natalie and Mike where Natalie was saying she wasn't sure that she loved Mike. And then it got really weird and really awkward and very quiet because Natalie claims she wasn't wearing her ring during this tell-all because she didn't want to lose it and she was afraid it was an expensive ring, it was going to get lost. And Sean kind of goes around the room, does anyone believe Natalie? Which was kind of shitty. Obviously, no one believes her, but everyone gives their little two cents about taking off their rings when they're washing things, etc. It's just weird. So Sean's got to scramble because no one's talking. And maybe, you know, Sean's not that great at improving. So she starts asking Natalie why they arrived separate today. Since you're not going to talk about the ring, what's going on? Again, Natalie refuses to answer. So then we get a clip of Mike calling off the wedding and we get the whole recap of the season. I really don't even know where to go because there's just a lot of back and forth between Mike saying, I don't know, I don't know, so I don't know either. None of us know why they arrived separately. We all know that they are not a good match, but we're not getting any information out of them. So Natalie says the night that he called off the wedding, or the morning he called off the wedding, he had taken off for 4 hours overnight and no one could find him. She's calling Uncle Bo, she's calling Tamara. And all Mike will admit to was going down the hill past Tamara's house and past a river, and he was there for 4 or 6 hours. Put a pin in them for now. We will come back to them later. We jump over to Yara and Jovi. Yara's emotional, and they look back at all these things they overcame during the season, which is mainly Yara being sad because she was all alone. Jovi was gone for most of her pregnancies, and now Yara is still sad because she's still away from her family. Her mom hasn't met her daughter, and that is very sad. All of us can relate to missing someone or missing out on something over this last year. And truly, thank the IT people of the world for all the infrastructure and technology and innovations they've come up with, because we can video chat with people now. Thank God. My sister, when she had my nieces, there was no video chatting way back in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was just starting up with, what, Skype? Maybe there was America Online still. I don't know. I'm old. I don't really remember, but it definitely has improved. So thank goodness for that. Now then, Sean just had to go mess up a perfectly happy new mom and a new marriage, and she plays the clip of Jovi going upstairs at the strip club to the champagne room. And Yara bursts out in tears, she pulls her hands back, recoils from Jovi, totally disgusted. Now, I have to mention that I didn't appreciate Rebecca interjecting all the time because she was like, oh shit, oh that's bad, whoa Yara, whoa, like, can you just back off right now, Rebecca? Yara gets it, okay, she is hurt, she understands what's going on, can you just pipe down for now? It's not about you, Rebecca. And it only got worse from there because Jovi's mom calls in and she starts adding her two cents. And then we get another clip from 90 Day Bears All, which I don't watch because I don't think it's that interesting. But Jara, Jesus. Oh my God, is that their couple name, Jara? Well, I'm definitely jarred after watching this because Jovi took a lie detector on Barrizal and he freaking failed it. And Yara didn't have access to that clip, or she didn't know it. So the hits just keep on coming for our girl. And remember, she is our girl. She's our bitch. Even when she is feeling like shit, seeing her husband go upstairs with a stripper, she maintains her composure, but still says her piece. You know, she's like, I'm not okay with this, but what do you want me to do right now? What do you guys want me to do? I didn't have any idea about this, but here we are. I'm married to the man. We have a new baby. So I guess I have to do what I can and eat shit and move on. First of all, way to tackle the English slang. And also, she really came out looking like Beyonce burning down the house by saying that. She didn't crumble in the moment. She didn't storm off stage. She sat there, said what she wanted to say, showed her emotions. And that really is the way to come out of a 90 Day Fiancé tell-all like a pro, looking like a goddamn queen. And I also want to give Jovi's mom, Gwen, an MVP, MVM award, Most Valuable Mom, for not excusing Jovi of anything. She did not let him get off easy. Okay, well, get off was a really bad choice of words, but you guys get me. What I didn't understand was why TLC stages their sets like they do. Throughout the entire episode, my eyes kept on going to those goddamn layered rugs. They do this for every after show, every tell-all. They go on Wayfair and they just buy all the rugs, layer those things up. They had square, rectangle, indoor, outdoor, round, just throw it down. There's a production. Throw down some pattern throw pillows and call it a world-class set. Not quite. I don't know what's going on, but it's so distracting. Moving forward, Julia and Brandon will settle in. Turns out Julia is kind of a spoiled brat. I mean, talk about two peas in a pod here. She and Brandon are exactly the same. He'd been showing her properties and apartments all this time, even before she came here. But Julia was the one who thought they were all too small and too shitty. So they had no choice but to move in with his parents. Okay, it sounds like they're still there too, which means I don't have any sympathy for Julia, certainly, anymore. Now that we have this information, she can't have it both ways. You can't go bitching about shoveling up pig shit if you're choosing to live free at their house instead of getting your own place. I mean, don't get me wrong, Betty and Ron will always be too involved, but Julia may be more like Brandon than we know. Yeah, it looks like everyone else on the stage agrees because they all start questioning Julia like, wait. You said you didn't want to do all that work, like poor little farm girl. You hate pigs and sheep and goats and all that. But now we're finding out that you are the one telling Brandon not to do it, that you will do it so you can spend more time together in the evening. What? I mean, I get what Julia is saying, but you can't go bitching and complaining about it. And Jovi and Yara, I love them now together. They actually compliment each other. And I was loving it because they were all over her shit. They saw right through Julia, and Julia certainly was not prepared for that. Like, she thought Yara and herself were besties, that Yara was not going to come for her, and she did. And you know who is actually loving this more than I was? Ron. That red-faced smileaholic was rocking himself through a giggle storm. I have never seen a man smile wider, even Dave at the birth of our own children, than when Yara and Jovi took sides over getting birth control for Julia. Let me just say, I personally still think it's disgusting. And then Mike talking about how babies are made, that just made my tubes tie themselves. But seeing Ron and Betty take delight in talking about their daughter-in-law's fertility is beyond disgusting. And that was a huge miss for me in terms of Yara and Jovi's opinions. Now, Rebecca kind of, she was very outspoken throughout the entire tell-all, and I vacillated between cheering her on and wanting to tell her to shut up. Same thing with Andrew. I wanted to hear from him so I could yell at him, but all in all, I mean, he just needs to check the bad highlights at the door and get the hell out of there. Go back to his Fortnite over 30 chat room that he came from. I wish he never came at all, especially when he demanded all of this attention at the end. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's get back to Mike and Natalie. I think they definitely need to go on a season of Marriage Family Boot Camp after this, because this is going to be a very damaging family dynamic between Mike and his mom for sure. And that's kind of sad. But let's check in with Tamara from down the hill. She's calling in with a fresh new haircut. Trish, Michael's mom, also calls in, and it's a battle of the bangs, right? It's Trish versus Tamara and who supports Mike more. They're both on different sides of the fence in terms of should he or should he not stay with Natalie. And it's very weird because they're talking about Natalie as if she's not there. And I did feel bad for Natalie in that respect, even though she is absolutely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So Trish admits to asking Tamara to make her way up the hill and object to the wedding on the wedding day. But Tamara said she told Trish no. This is not the hill I will die on, literally, because, you know, Natalie would kill her with her laser beam eyes if anyone were to make a peep during that ceremony. So it ends up being this really weird situation where it's quiet once again. And I think this is Mike's fault because, as we saw earlier, he doesn't say much. He'll only just say, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I don't know what happened. Or Natalie knows, you know, you gotta take a stand here. And although he said later outside, not in front of Natalie and not in front of his mom, that his mom is his mom and his wife is his wife. Well, first of all, that doesn't mean anything, and way too little too late. So we have Natalie here just helpless, hearing all of this for the first time. Like I said, you gotta feel bad for her because she's got no one really on her side there. Maybe Tamara, but not quite. I mean, at the end of the day, Mike and Natalie are just a bad match. There's no side to take. They're a bad match. And if I had to take any side, I'm going with the boxed lunch that got thrown away in the garbage because Natalie couldn't stomach sitting next to Mike as he was scraping up his black bean chili from the bottom of that plastic bowl. Speaking of scraping, who here has gotten any nips and tucks? Am I right? Really, Sean, I hated this. I hate this question. It was very Andy Cohen asking whose boobs are the biggest this season. Am I right, ladies? Ugh. So again, Rebecca unapologetically admits these injections and Yara admits to a nose job. I'll say this till the cows come home. In terms of nose jobs, facial work, I legit had a deviated septum surgery when I was 20, 21, and the damn ENT was too straight-laced and professional to give me a little shave down while he was in there. Even after going in, they found a surprise bone spur that they had to chip away anyway, and the recovery was way worse than childbirth, FYI. And yet, I still have this schnoz. So when I had kids, I prayed, and I've still been praying, I'm crossing all of my fingers and toes right now, that one day my kids will throw their head back, their big old heads, into my nose, and my insurance can pay for a broken nose and fix it. But no, for now, I am stuck with the nose that I broke when I dove into a pool when I was 11, and my parents didn't believe me, so I went to a family wedding in North Carolina with a broken frickin' nose, and yet here I am. All that to say, do whatever the hell you want with your body. And in terms of Julia piping in, it's awfully easy for a size 2 Julia to say, go to the gym and work off your tummy. You don't need to change your body. It's not natural. Don't change your wrinkles. It's fixable in the gym. Okay, what is Julia, 22, 23? Just wait until she hits 30 or... oh God, bloody hell, 40. And no matter how hard you work, how hard you sweat, your body holds on to fat like Betty holding on to Brandon. Let's just see how chill Julia is with her dancer body, how that fares in about 15 years after kids. So I'm with Yara. I'm with Rebecca. Whatever you do, own it. Do whatever the hell you want. Inject it, pump it up, take it out, shave it down, whatever. Now let's jump to Rebecca's daughter calling in. Tiffany, Rebecca's daughter, and Micah, her son-in-law, call in, and immediately Rebecca starts doubling down on this friend hitting on Zed. This is a fantasy. She wants women to hit on Zed. She wants to believe that younger women find Zed attractive. I sincerely think this blonde girl was trying to be helpful, and Rebecca's just crazy, and she's got some insecurities, and that came out right there. End of story. So, oh, actually, hold on a second. We go to their wedding night where we learn that Zed was in a huge fight with Rebecca, that he caused this fight because he got creeped out in the cabin they were in. They were in the woods. He thought he heard something or saw something, and it looked like a horror movie. So when Rebecca came in, he whispered to her like a child, you know, telling their mom they don't want to go to sleep because there's a boogeyman out in the forest. She got mad at him, and then she started playing head games with him and tested him by getting into the hot tub naked. First of all, like I was saying, that crazy insecure part, that's what getting into the hot tub naked is. That's playing a head game. You know, you don't find me sexy enough. He wouldn't be able to win in that situation no matter what. And you know who's really losing during this entire exchange? Rebecca's daughter and son-in-law. They're sitting there listening to their mother-in-law. Ugh, I don't know which one's worse. Talking about how she's waiting for him naked in the hot tub. Could you not? Poor Micah, who's sitting there wearing a George Michael earring, by the way. Did you see that? He had like a dangling cross earring in one ear. Even he had to put his head down and put his hand on his head like, oh God, I'm going to need more than faith to get through this one and get that image out of my mind. Jesus. All right. So in the end, everyone agrees that Zed is a nice guy. He loves Rebecca. Great. Goodbye. Hopefully forever, because I'm really done with this couple. They're just kind of boring. Now, in the very last 2 minutes of the show, a producer comes on stage and tells Andrew that Amir is going to be calling in, so he's got a skedaddle. But no, Andrew throws a freaking hissy fit. I mean, talk about children behaving better than adults. Take your own advice, Andrew. He threw a tantrum like I've only seen serial killers allegedly pull before they're put on trial or executed. I'm pretty sure I saw something on Mindhunters with that hottie, Jonathan Groff. You know, they're the ones who like attention. They like to be a bad boy, but also a little bit of a psychotic victim at the same time. I mean, Andrew sucks. He is the worst. And like I said last week, I have a little bit of intel, which really we're all seeing on the screen right now, that shows and that has proven that he is a controlling asshole. The fact that he demanded production producers to do what he wants to do, if I can't talk to her in person, I'm going to leave. Who made you so important? Who made you believe that your presence is so important that many people, probably hundreds of people, are going to change their mind? I blame his mom, and I blame whoever the hell helped raise him. He freaking sucks. Oh, I can't wait till next week, because he is going to be paying the price for being such an asshole this whole season, especially on social media, which I'm sure he'll probably puss out and he won't be able to take it and he'll go dark. One could wish, right? One can only hope. All right, so let's just jump right into Sister Wives here. Everyone's talking, and Cody is with Janelle this week, or I should say FaceTiming, not talking. And of course, the issue on the table is COVID. Now, you remember last week when I said, I think Janelle is the smartest and most level-headed. I love her. I kind of take that back now. Like, she's definitely smart, but she's letting her opinion about COVID transmission get in the way of her usual logic. And Robin is definitely the one leading the charge in isolating from everyone else. But let's just be honest here. Robin is following the CDC recommendations, right? Which is great. But she's also got Cody all wrapped up in her plan to keep King Solomon and Princess Areola up in her homeowner tower with Cody, 75% of the time, while the other wives are just figuring it out on their own. So it's awfully easy for Robin to come out and say, I think we should all stay separate, when really it's she and Cody staying separate. Now, Cody is just letting it all hang out this year. And yes, he was harsh with Mary last week, and I got some shit about still taking his side over Mary's, but my disdain for Mary will never go away. But yes, he is being extra harsh. And maybe there's a possibility that Cody doesn't realize the pandemic has gotten to him, like he's going crazy like a lot of us, but also maybe he's had Robin in his ear for extended weeks at a time. Remember, he is spending most of his time with her. Now, I don't think Cody realizes how impressionable he really is, but you and I see him very differently. We can see how he acts differently when he's around other people, new people. Think about how he starts dancing like crazy and he starts getting really flirty around women and how his personality changes once he's around other men. You know, his guy friends, his bros like Caleb. Now, I also think Cody has perhaps recently seen Office Space for the first time and he wants to duck out of his marriages in a very, you know, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you manner. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out which wives he thinks can get fucked by other people besides him. Speaking of Janelle, Cody said two unforgivable things, in my opinion. And yeah, I realize I'm a total asshole and I'm a hypocrite because everything he said last week I thought was hilarious and mostly justified. But now when he says stuff to Janelle, I'm like, I'm drawing the line here. Cody's an asshole. Now, even if the things he said about Janelle were true, that she's being lazy and full of shit, even if she is both of those things, that's something Cody should say to her, not to the world, with her not sitting next to him on the couch being able to defend herself. At least when he was saying it to Mary, he was saying it to Mary. When he's saying it about Janelle, she's not there to be able to defend herself, and I hated that. So if I were Janelle or Christine, I would probably be opting to hang out with my kids or someone else's kids over Cody coming around. That's for sure. Now, then we get to the stupid, really time filler about Gwendolyn getting her car stuck in the mud. You know, at that rate, I was like, Cody, why don't you just throw Janelle under the car while you're throwing her under the bus? Jesus. So a lot of pulling the car out, whatever. Janelle and Robin have a conversation at the same time, but unless I miss something, I don't think there was anything earth-shattering there. I think Janelle has probably read a lot of self-help books over the quarantine, and she has realized that her communication style needs to change or she needs to improve it. And that's basically what she says to Robin here. But later, Janelle sends Cody off to Christine's house because she's going to celebrate her belated birthday. Now, Cody has talked about Christine like this quite a bit before, how she's more spontaneous, that they have a lot of fun together, which I do believe. I really think that Christine could be a great time. I mean, if they drank, she would be a riot. Cody could be a good time in small doses, in micro doses, if you will. But Cody and Christine admit to not enjoying living in a polygamous marriage, in a polygamous lifestyle at this point. I mean, this is huge. This is way bigger than the editing let on. Cody himself admitted he does not enjoy this. He's always talked about the wives having a hard time with it, but never directly has he said, I do not enjoy this either. So in my mind, that's kind of a wrap. It's very obvious that if you're keeping score, Cody has dissed all of his wives except Robin. So I think we have our answer here. Cody and his legal wife are happy. They're the happy ones. So happy, in fact, that Robin wants to make another baby. Now, I'm sure Robin didn't explicitly mean to imply all of her other sister wives' eggs are all dried up like Coyote Pass's pond. That was never a pond. Go back and find whatever my previous episodes were. That thing is not a freaking pond. But she did. She just had to remind everyone that she, Robin, is the youngest and newest wife. She's a sprightly 41 and she can crank out Cody Spawn whenever she wants within the next few years. Now, this was all hypothetical, just talking about maybe if we have another baby, do you want to have another baby? But for some reason, it just grossed me out, even though I get very excited about in real life babies. But then Robin started talking about feeling little spirits, that she's always had future or maybe past children around her from a previous life or a pre-life, and she wants to make sure that she doesn't leave these possible little children spirits behind in the afterlife or something. And I get what she was saying, like it kind of makes sense, but it also didn't. I'm going to try to put on my logical Janelle hat here. Hear me out. What if this brunette boy she had pictured is just a son whose last name is, wait for it, Brown? You know, like Solomon Brown or Dayton, her son who has brown hair. It's just a thought. Then again, Robin does have God's direct extension. She's got his direct cell phone number. He always calls her, you know, to grant wishes for mortgages or rental homes or fleur-de-lis costume jewelry, which, by the way, I'm going to pause right here very quickly. I want to see if my sister wife's closet is still open. Hold on a second. Okay, well, I have found the website. It's my sister wife's closet, not wives with a V. It's wife's, almost as if there's an apostrophe there. And I was going to give you a snarky little commentary on this photo being an older photo, but before I could look at it, a pop-up came on the screen saying, "We'll be back soon. We're busy updating the store for you. Sign up for the newsletter to stay informed." So guys, I think they're on a little hiatus. God, as if this last year hasn't been hard enough. Now our favorite wife's sister wife's closet is closed. Jeez. Okay, let's move on to, oh, Hunter coming home. Hunter came home. All right, let's move forward. Now we have this conversation, this sit down between Janelle and Christine, and I really like it. I like these two together because it's apparent that they truly respect and trust one another. What was not clear is what I believe to be an unspoken knowledge. Like these two have something that they agree on. They both have their own issues for sure that they want to share with everyone, or maybe not share with everyone, but I think there's something they both know and they want to say to Mary and Cody and Robin, but they're scared to share it with that group, and the group meaning us. They don't want to share it with everyone, but they know something needs to be said. And I completely understand where Christine would be coming from, that Cody just dropping in every 2 weeks disrupts her flow. And I think all parents who either work from home or you're a stay-at-home parent, you're the default parent who really does most of the time and kid management around the house, most of the parenting, we can understand where Christine is coming from. You know, having a mom or a dad jump in after they've been gone at work all day, or maybe they travel for work a lot, or they have other wives for whatever reason. Maybe they're off making brown-haired babies with Mother Robin. It can throw off your house equilibrium, especially if you have high-energy children that I think some of our sister wives have. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying Cody is a bad person or Christine is bad for thinking Cody disrupts her flow. I just think that's life. And life is not equal or balanced or fair. That's for damn sure. But it's just how much or how long someone, Christine, can take that kind of disruption. And for her, being closer to friends and family and her daughters in Utah, remember, McKelty and Aspen are in Utah. I think for Christine, it might be worth the sacrifice of losing Cody, or let's just say releasing Cody to the other sister wives. It's worth it to her. I just have a really hard time seeing that actually happen, though, because I do think Christine loves him. I just think she is in love with him and loves him, but maybe she's at the point in her life where she loves and respects herself too much to let herself sacrifice so much, if that makes any sort of sense. Let's just say Christine does want to inevitably make this move, probably when Sister Wives is off the air, which I hope never happens because I'll always watch this show. Maybe she'll move closer to Aspen when Aspen has her little adorable blonde or ginger babies with the brother from Seeking Sister Wife. And maybe she just wants to be close to McKelty and Tony so she can take care of their new little baby Avalon. If you didn't catch that, that's Tony saying the baby's name. Avalon. I think it's Avalon, which is pretty. Maybe they'll call her Ava. Maybe they'll make a piñata of her and they'll beat it like they beat each other's piñatas on their wedding day. I mean, it would only be fitting, right? Baby Avalon's first birthday, they just beat her with a stick. Oh, nothing says love like beating each other's face in via a piñata. That wedding episode will never get old. Anyway, this week's Would You Rather, I'm going a little bit fun here because I've gone pretty gross and pretty dark in previous weeks. Would you rather eat a boxed lunch with Mike or Natalie? Mike is pretty damn awful, so I think I'm going to go with Natalie. I mean, her eyes are going to see through me like the portrait of Jesus on my grandma's dresser, but I could get Natalie to spill everything she knows about Tamara and about Uncle Bo. And I refuse to believe Uncle Bo and Tamara are not making her trailer go rocking every time someone comes knocking, if you know what I'm saying. Join me over on Patreon this week on We Love to Hate TV. The link is in the show notes. We are recapping the latest three episodes of Unexpected and Seeking Sister Wife. And on Total Request Podcast, again, link is in the show notes, we are recapping a season two episode of Jerseylicious and the new Hulu documentary, Kid 90. That all said, I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I'll be back next week with more 90 Day Fiancé and Sister Wives. And until then, mask up, get your vaccine, and stay salty.